The following podcast is brought to you by the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California. Welcome to Vertical Journeys Podcast, where we'll dive into topics like my personal climbing journey, battling my fear of heights, the ethical responsibilities we as climbers bear, and climbing culture. Join us as we ascend into the fascinating world of climbing, one grip at a time. Hi, I'm your host, Squash. And today, we're diving deep into the heart-pounding world of climbing to explore a topic that is often in the forefront of our thoughts as climbers. The dangers, the potential for death, risk management, and most importantly, safety. Climbing is a passion that's often misunderstood by those who haven't experienced it firsthand. To outsiders, it might seem like an obsession with unnecessary risk, but to us, it's a thrilling journey where every ascent is a battle of mind over matter. In today's episode, we'll peel back the layers of this incredible sport to answer the burning question: how dangerous is climbing really? We'll explore the potential consequences, the potential for death, and the critical element of risk management and mitigation that climbers swear by. When it comes to outdoor climbing, there are four main disciplines that climbers take part in. The first one is called bouldering, and it consists of very short climbs where a fall is normally harmless and the only safety gear is a crash pad. The second discipline is sport climbing, and it involves a climb that typically ranges from 30 feet to 150 feet. In this discipline, climbers use permanent anchors that are bolted onto the wall for protection, and for this reason, it's a relatively safe method of climbing. It's also the most popular. The third discipline, and the one that I take part in the most, is trad climbing. Trad climbing is typically used on longer routes, but they can range from 30 feet to 3,000 feet, and in some cases even more. Aside from climbing without a rope, this is the discipline that has the most dangers involved. It's a leave-no-trace method of climbing, as climbers manually fix temporary anchors onto the wall for protection and remove them as they move up. This method of climbing is popular in places like Yosemite and Tahoe, and is considered to be the most adventurous form of climbing. The fourth and final discipline is called free solo. In this discipline, you're climbing without a harness or a rope, and a single fall would likely be fatal. For this reason, this form of climbing is something that should be reserved for the best of the best. And even still, only in cases where they're climbing way below their skill level. Unfortunately, in a day where social media is ever present, this hasn't always been the case. And more recently, less skilled climbers are attempting free solo climbs that are too close to their max skill level. This has resulted in an increase of deaths in the free solo discipline. For the sake of this podcast, we'll primarily be talking about the third discipline I mentioned, trad climbing, as it's the discipline I primarily take part in. I like trad climbing because of the adventure aspect. It rides the line on what's an acceptable risk for me. It's not as dangerous as free solo, but it's not as boring as sport climbing. As a trad climber, the dangers of climbing is something that's ever present. Whether it's a rock hitting you, or you falling and hitting a ledge, or somehow your rope getting cut. Getting hurt while climbing is something that I'm always thinking about, especially as someone who started because of a fear of heights. Throughout my relatively short tenure as an outdoor climber, I've heard of a couple stories of people climbing and injuring themselves. The first story that I heard was about my partner Mike, who broke both of his legs while climbing, and on a route that I've done many times before. Mike was climbing, and he went up the route. But when you're on a blank face of granite, sometimes it's hard to know exactly where to go. We have guidebooks to refer to, but they're often scribbles and a representation of a large piece of rock. Sometimes it's hard to defer between one piece of rock in the scribble and another piece. And often, the guidebooks were written decades ago. Rocks fall, and the faces change. Landmarks that were easy to see 30 years ago might not be so easy anymore. It's easy to get off route, and it's dangerous. What could be an easy climb could quickly turn into something that's a dangerous climb, well above your skill level. And this is exactly what happened to Mike. Mike reached a point on the climb where he had to make a decision. Did he want to go left and traverse around a corner, or did he want to go straight up the crack? Mike looked left, and he couldn't see what was around the corner. That sense of mystery is something that's scary to a climber. Climbing around the corner, not knowing what's on the other side, if it gets really hard when you get there, can make you reconsider if you knew where the route was supposed to go in the first place. So Mike decided to go up instead of committing himself to the traverse. That was a mistake. Quickly, Mike got into harder climbing territory than he was expecting. And with nowhere for him to place gear, he started to run out the rope. 10 feet quickly became 20, which quickly became 30. And Mike had no gear placements below him. The next thing that would catch him if he fell was a ledge. And that's exactly what happened. Mike fell 30 feet until he hit a ledge, instantly breaking both of his legs. One thing that's important about trad climbing is that with every accident, there's a lesson to be learned. And in most cases, the accidents occur from human error. They were preventable. And Mike's case isn't any different. Mike made the mistake of not committing himself to any one path when he was unsure of where to go. Mike could have climbed 10 feet and seen how it felt. If it felt bad, he could have climbed back down. He could have climbed around the corner until he could have seen what was on the other side. And if that was the wrong way, he could have climbed back that way. As an outdoor trad climber, you never want to climb up something that you don't think you could climb back down. That's setting yourself up for failure. The next climbing accident I want to talk about was an accident that happened to a famous climber by the name of Brad Gobright. Brad was a climber who cut his teeth on Yosemite granite, and he was part of the new generation of climbers who were doing things in a faster and bolder style. As a climber, Brad had established many first ascents in Yosemite and Indian Creek, two of the most popular climbing destinations in the U.S. And he has speed records on the nose of El Cap, a record that's reserved for the best of the best in the climbing world. But the death of Brad is one of a cautionary tale, a tale of complacency. Brad had been climbing so much and had spent so much time near the abyss that he was completely used to it. Brad was climbing completely unfettered by fear. But a healthy amount of fear is something that should always exist. Fear is a tool that can keep us safe as climbers. Brad was climbing in Mexico at a location called Potrero Chico, where there are cliffs as high as 2,000 feet. But Brad's accident didn't happen on the way up the mountain. As many climbing accidents do, Brad's accident happened on rappel. Brad was climbing with somebody he didn't know very well, somebody he met on his trip in Mexico, and they wanted to get down the route fast. In an effort to save time, Brad and his partner rappelled in a style called simul rappelling, where both climbers serve as each other's counterweight. The rope is wrapped at a midpoint around a single fixed piece of gear, at which point both climbers descend on either ends of the rope, serving as each other's counterbalance. If one climber falls off, that means the other one goes down too. An important measure that climbers take in order to ensure that you don't go off the end of your rope is to tie a knot at the end. So if you do happen to get there, the knot will catch in your belay device, stopping you from completely falling off the end of the rope. In Brad's case, there was no knot tied on either end of the rope, and they forgot to set the rope at the midpoint. This meant that there wasn't an even amount of rope for both climbers to share. So when Brad's partner got off the end of his rope and slipped off, he fell about 30 feet onto a ledge that caught him. Unfortunately for Brad, when this happened, he also began to fall, but he bounced off the ledge and kept going. This was the end of Brad's life, and it was a sorry, sad death to have as a climber, one that shouldn't have happened. The lessons to be learned from Brad's accident are many, and they're something that I take with me whenever I go on an expedition. The main ones being, always tie a knot at the end of your rope when rappelling. A second one would be, ensure that your rope is set to the midpoint. Overall, Brad's accident is highlighted by complacency. And that's the main lesson I took with me when I learned about Brad's accident. It's easy to get complacent on the wall. Once you've done enough climbing, you get used to it up there. And you want to climb in the fastest style in order to be able to get more climbing in on a single day. But climbing fast means taking shortcuts. It means putting yourself in harm's way more, taking more risks. It's clear that risk management and mitigation are the cornerstones of safe and fulfilling climbing experiences. Remember, climbing is not just about defying gravity. It's about understanding its relentless pull and respecting the consequences it can impose. It's a balancing act where self-awareness, preparation, and knowledge are your greatest allies. Knowing your own limits and having the courage to acknowledge them is the most important factor when venturing into the vertical world. Climbing can be a passionate pursuit, but it should never be reckless. So whether it's scaling a peak in Yosemite or climbing a 30-foot rock in Marin, you should embrace the thrill but never forget the importance of managing risk. Your life and the lives of your climbing companions depend on it. Grappling with the fact that there is potential for death is something that anyone who has done outdoor climbing is faced with. Do I want to die? No. But living a life ruled by fear isn't something that I want to do either. On a daily basis, we make decisions that put ourselves in harm's way, but we assess the potential threat with how worth the experience is. Whenever I leave from a climbing trip, I always say, now for the most dangerous part of the trip. And that's the drive home. Statistically, you're more likely to die doing something most of us do on a daily basis. Every day, people take the risk of driving because it's worth the utility that comes from it. For me, the risk of climbing is something that is well worth the satisfaction and fulfillment that climbing provides for me. So, how dangerous is climbing really? The answer to this question isn't as black and white as onlookers may think when they see climbers. Like most things in life, this answer is nuanced and ranges widely depending on the climbing discipline, the climb itself, and the amount of risk that an individual climber is willing to take on. So, next time you see a climber in Yosemite, don't just assume they're riding the edge of death. Climbing is mostly safe if the necessary precautions are taken. And if they are, it provides an adventure of a lifetime.